am Stephen, and I am a grateful member of Al-Anon.
Also
a double winner. Many of you know what that means. That means I identify in another program. And I consider it a winner because I know I need it, and I go. If it was my choice, I wouldn't have any of these programs. My Al-Anon Serenity date is November of 2007. So if I stay willing, November will be 10 years as a member of Al-Anon. When I first came into Al-Anon over 9 years ago, I had 17 years in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and other programs. I say that because it's important in my story. One thing that was very important for me, I would go to one meeting on Monday night on church by the Safeway, and there was something in the preamble that said, I may be paraphrasing, some of us may have come from other programs, but we're here for the side of us that needs Al-Anon. That was very important for me because I came in with all the self-knowledge that I thought I had around the steps. You know, like I said, I was 17 years sober at that time. I came in with that knowledge, so I was really important. We're here for the side of us that needs Al-Anon. It also said we avoid detailed descriptions of the alcoholic and we focus on ourselves. And I'm like, what? How can you help me if I don't give you the detail of what that so-and-so did? And, you know, so it took a while for both. So out of respect for Al-Anon, I am going to share my experience, strength, and hope and how the steps apply for me on the side of me that needs Al-Anon. But it is important for me to share the door I came through. But Al-Anon definitely put me together. I say my serenity date for Al-Anon because that's when I came here, wanted to be here, and knew I needed to be here. There were many dates before that. And I look at all the things I used to say growing up. I mean, many of us have heard the sayings, you know, I'm waiting for the next shoe to drop. You know, I had to change all those things. So when the I always say when the next shoe dropped, then I'll have a pair. I had to switch it. That part about this was the straw that broke the camel's back. I'm not really interested in the straw. I'm interested in when did I put a basket to start hauling these issues. So November of 9 years ago was the straw that brought me here. There were many dates that go before that that I could represent at the basket. So let me just get right into what brought me here. Even though I qualified for, you know, they have Al-Teen, I could have been qualified for, you know, Al-Infant, really, if if they had that. And, you know, I definitely understand my CODA issues. Al-Anon, being affected by someone else's drinking or using, my codependency issues. You don't have to be an alcoholic or an addict for me to have issues and problems in those relationships. So for me, it's just like a sandwich, you know, and it's so, you know, it can be different things, but they're the basic element, the bread, and add whatever you want. So that's a little bit about me. So I was in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. They asked any newcomers in the room. He raised his hand and said, hi, my name is so-and-so. I'm a recovering alcoholic and crystal meth addict. And I ignored all of it. Only thing I did was like, oh my God, he's good looking. And I pursued it into the gates of insanity. All of that self-knowledge. Now, friends had their strong opinion and concern. They're like, you are not doing 12-step work. That was one. They were like, you are not immune from the shark bites, you know. You are going to drown. You need to go to Al-Anon. And I use some very, you know, detailed exclamation points. Back the F up. Don't tell me how to live my life. Don't talk to me about 13 stepping. Show me where it is in the book. You want me to quote some things on the big book? You know, look into 12 and 12. People are, you know, they should be acquainted long enough where they're to know where they're compatible emotionally, mentally, and spiritually for a fact. I'm like, okay, and so I had all kinds of things, but it was insane. And I will say, and I will qualify from my own experience, I just turned 27 years sober on July 21st. I just turned 56 years old on August 1st. And in my years in the program, people who quote unquote fall into that category of newcomer, after 30 days, after a year, whatever, I'm going to share my experience, strength, and hope, and very, very much aware of the judgment that would come along with that. But I'm here to tell my truth, not try to get people to be okay with it. So my truth was, In my those years, there were three different people who fell into that category, and one was a mistake. And this one, I pursued it into the gates of insanity, like I said. I became the person. This person, for example, would say, "Stephen, I'll see you at 6 o'clock. So at 6:05, I'm like, maybe just run a little late. Let me just figure out the traffic from where he's going. 6:15, I'm like, 6:30, I'm calling going, "Oh, I'm not sure. Maybe I was supposed to call you." The denial starting. 8 o'clock, I'm going crazy. 8:30, it occurs to me, "Oh, wow. Star 69 or one of those things, you dial before you dial the number so it will block your number. So, you know, I'm now going to any links. You will not ignore me." So I block the number, and then the phone picked up the phone. "Hello," and then I completely go off and I'm yelling and cussing. The phone hangs up. Insane. So what got me here was it was another one of those times, another one of those moments, and this time I'm at the door. And I am not knocking, I am banging on the door, and I am just like an animal, a dog foaming at the mouth. You know that part they read earlier, we become unreasonable without even knowing it? That was a perfect picture for that. And I could hear the little thing open on the door and him saying, "Oh my God, you're so angry." And I asked my higher power that I call truth, God, whatever it is for you, I'm like, "Please back me away from the door." And I got here. And before that, friends would say, "You need to go to Al-Anon." I would say, "I'm not going to Al-Anon." One young lady that I know, a friend of mine, came up to me after one of the other 12-step meetings and said, "You will get in enough pain." And I'm like, "Back up, are you trying to jinx me? You know, what is this?" You know, and the reality of it was, I had gotten to enough pain. So I came in here with all of that rage and all of that anger. And then I would hear, "We're here for the side of us that needs Al-Anon. We're here to focus on ourselves and not detailed descriptions." So I came into Al-Anon angry, disappointed. It had brought up a lot of past issues. I didn't start at childhood, but if I were to go back, I was the little boy sitting on the steps waiting for Dad to come home. Sometimes he would come, sometimes he wouldn't. I remember one weekend he brought a bike, and the following weekend he took it back because it belonged to his girlfriend's kid. So what happened for me at that time, I'm the youngest of five, no one said anything about not waiting, but I intuitively realized one day, if you don't wait, you won't be disappointed. So I got up never to wait again. So fast forward back into this situation, when I have plans with someone, and they are running late, I can become unreasonable without even knowing it. It can trigger a historical event. So besides this person's alcoholism and drug addiction, I had no idea it was bumping up against a pre-existing thing. So what are the tools that I use to try to control and manage that? I use nagging. I use a lot of "you shoulds." I was trying to point out his recovery. It was just insane. So when I got here to Al-Anon and I started to tell the story and I started to look back at my childhood and I started to look back at my relationships and how I am affected with people with alcoholism or drug addiction, they would read sometimes in the literature, "You can find joy or happiness whether the alcoholic is drinking or not." I'm like, "Oh, hell no. That is not going to happen," because I did not understand that. I thought I had to control and manage. So as I got into the step work and I was doing the work, this weird thing started happening. I started to see me, and that became one of my prayers, actually my higher power, my Al-Anon prayer. Help me see me. And I started doing writing, and then I started finding some uncomfortable truths about this. And I realized, I'm like, if this person's alcoholism as an addiction, as he identified himself and as I identified for him, if his disease had manifested itself in the way where he became 100% obsessed with me, he completely doted on me, he could not get enough of me, even if the disease was killing him, if it had manifested itself that way, I would never have come here. But it did not manifest itself that way. It manifested itself with drugs, sex, and strangers. it manifested itself with, I'm going to be gone for 3 or 4 days or a week with no show. And when I'm coming down, I'm going to call you. There's going to be tears and there's going to be remorse. And I'm going to ask you to come hold me and let me fall back together. And I would create this pattern. But I realized, I'm like, what would be the difference if he, you know, some people go, oh, so-and-so was a happy drunk and they were jovial and all that. I'm like, the disease of alcoholism is the disease of alcoholism anyway. Another uncomfortable truth was I realized there were times that the sexual intimacy, when he was under the influence, was very satisfying and enjoying. And I was just like, wow, you can't share that. I'm like, why can't you share that? That is the truth of the disease. So I'm like, oh. So there were times where I ignored the fact that, but the intimacy was non-existent when he was not. So that was something else that I had to look at and go, what is my part in this? You know, are you going to call it intimacy or are you going to call it dancing or intimacy with the drug or the alcohol? You know, and this became about me. I had to stop talking about what he could or he could not do. So what the step started to reveal to me in alcohol is just because I'm in Al-Anon does not mean I'm always right. Not this relationship, but another one. I remember when I had some time in the other program, and one of my ex-partners said to me, every time I come home and I'm ready to put my hand on the doorknob, I am filled with anxiety because I have no idea who in the hell you're going to be. And I had to start to look at what does my program look like, and this program as well, when I'm not in the rooms, when I'm not up here sharing. If it's just me and a partner, or just me and a friend, do I talk to them or do I talk at them? You know, am I unreasonable without even knowing it? And I could recognize that because I could be having some conflict with a partner or a friend, and then one of you could come around, and it would be like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, there could be this change. And I was like, wow, what is that about? And I also learned that I have a high tolerance for trying to make something work that is no longer working. There was a different relationship with a partner. We were already over. The relationship was open. We were living in separate places. I was in New York spending Thanksgiving with a boyfriend. He was still here in San Francisco. But it was so important for me to get to that 10-year anniversary mark. I'm like, you got to hang on. I've never been with anyone for 10 years. And it was over at 6. But I was still just hanging on. And so my Al-Anon thing, when I came here, I thought that I could share with you what happened to me as a child, what happened to the alcoholic, what did they do, what they did, what they should be doing, and I could feel that pat on my back, and I could feel that, you know, I'm right and they're wrong. And the step started to go, no, take a look at yourself. Take a look at you. Take a look at you banging on the door at 12:45 in the morning because someone did not show up. And you came into the program of Al-Anon believing you had self-knowledge. This person is suffering from the same disease you identify with, and it's manifesting itself in a very similar way to yours. And I was completely blind to that. You know, none of that matters now. You know, I would not be stood up. And what helped me, I would hear mothers talk about their children, and I would hear in Al-Anon they talk about detaching with love. And I'm like, you know, I can quote some of the things I hear, I can use them in a sentence, but to actually know what they mean and to actually know how to implicate them was a completely different thing. And I remember hearing this mother saying, as a mother, I will never detach from my child. And then she went on to share, and I got to get the understanding about like, oh, I get that, not that detaching, okay, you're out of my life, you're gone. Maybe that detaching, I love you, but I can't fix this part. And what I did, I came to Al-Anon, I learned some language. In my first 3 to 5 months, I was going through and I was cleaning up relationships that were not working. And I had a friend down in Southern California who I had known for many years. He had a certain personality type. That personality had been that way for a long time. But this particular time, it bothered me. Now I have Al-Anon. Now I'm going to set a boundary, but I'm going to set it quickly. I'm going to set it fiercely so I don't change my mind. And I caused so much damage because I detached with an act. And this person was blown out of the water. They were like, what's going on here? They even tried to approach me and go, what's going on? And I'm like, if you got to ask, it's even worse. You know? And I'm a strong believer, you know? I'm a strong believer. We teach people how to treat us. And I have taught a lot of people how to treat me. And I have taught a lot of people, or we have taught each other this dance. And all of a sudden, I came to Al-Anon, and I got some language, and I am setting these new boundaries with people who are not even quote-unquote qualifiers, you know. So the person who I quote-unquote say was my qualifier was just the straw in a basket that was very, very full. And I had to start looking at how do I show up for my friendships? How am I showing up for my relationships? And I want to talk about the amend process. The one gentleman that I'm talking about that I was banging on the door, eventually I even tried to put together an intervention. It was horrible. Just like the, I don't even know if you've ever seen that TV show where people are trying to put together an intervention. It was a train wreck, you know. And I get it now. The first person felt cornered. They came home, and all of a sudden, you know, the doors, people are knocking on the door, people are showing up, and they kind of give me that look, and all of a sudden they're like, oh, no. They can see what's going on, and I thought this was all loving and concern, and it did not go well. And for me, it was a turning point. At that point, I gave this person back their key. I'm like, I wish you the very best. I cannot do this. A whole bunch of different events happened, so now I'm in Al-Anon. I am truly detached with love. I don't have to give details of his behavior. I had to look at my reaction and my response. And it was like 4 years from that time, all of a sudden I'm at home. I'm on the phone talking and another call comes and I look and I don't recognize the number and I go back and I am finishing my call. And then when I was done, I go to listen to the message. And my heart kind of jumped. I'm like, oh my gosh, it was him 4 years later. The part that was amazing is I did not recognize the number. That's how much distance had occurred. And in the message, it was similar to all the messages 4 years earlier. There was grief, there was remorse, there was fear, there were consequences. And he was reaching out, can you come hold me? Can you come help me? Can you come let me fall together? And I waited for a moment, because for a moment I felt that, like, yes, I knew this day would come. And then I'm like, wait a minute, where's the love and compassion, you know? So I stopped, but I must acknowledge there was that feeling. And then I stopped, and I could hear the pain and the remorse from a place that was not so connected to me. It was just about this addict suffering. And I waited, because I know I did not have to call. I did not have to rescue. And I thought, what can I offer if I call? So I called, and I'm like, hello, this is Stephen. Told the story. I'm like, would you like me to pick you up and to take you to your family's house in Mill Valley? Because he's family. He had family in Mill Valley. And he said, no, I decided not to involve my family and my stuff anymore. And my higher power said, Stephen, did you hear what he just said? There's literally this voice, my higher power that I call Truth, saying, did you hear what he just said? And I stopped and I was quiet for a moment. And I'm like, it sounds like you still have options then. That's what I could offer for you. You know, I wish you the best. You know, I hope things get better. And 2 weeks probably later, I get a call saying, did you hear that so-and-so had hung himself? And at that time, I can tell you, I felt sadness and gratitude simultaneously. It was a very disturbing thing because there's the part of the disease, like, what if, you know, could have, would have, should have. And then I'm like, do you believe the things you have shared over the years? Do you believe the things that you have read? You are not his higher power. I am happy that I offered what I did, but I was powerless over his choice of accepting. So yeah, that was a very hard thing. And I guess I got to experience that Al-Anon can do healing, but that does not mean it's going to shield from grief. That does not mean it's going to shield from pain. It's going to shield from loss. What is it like for me now, especially when I look at dating? You know, I used to joke about it, and I would hear people say, it's like, oh, if I'm attracted to somebody, I know one thing, they're probably an alcoholic, they're an addict, they done got this, and, you know, we all laugh and all that. And it is funny, but when I came here, I'm like, I need it to be different. I do not want to be here 10 years later and not have a pause, not have a recognition, not have, oh, I'm going to rescue and fix you. I need to feel the magic and the power that the steps can do in transforming, which is why my Al-Anon prayer is, please help me see me. I can give detailed descriptions of the alcoholic and the addict, but can I give you detailed description of me? And so what it's like now, you know, someone that I am dating, boyfriend, even had the word boyfriend. And I can tell you at 55, he was the first man I ever said, do you want to be boyfriend? It was so giddy. It was, I was like a little childhood thing, because the old Stephen was physical attraction, sexual compatibility, we're married. We'll see how long it lasts. That's just the way it was. And the other part about, wow, what would it be like to date someone long enough to know where we're compatible emotionally, mentally, and spiritually? I don't care about how much we have in common. I care about how we navigate the things we don't have in common. So, you know, we dated. We found the understanding of what does this mean with monogamy? What did that mean and all of that? So we're on the same page. And we had a disagreement or a misunderstanding through text. Could you imagine having a misunderstanding through text? You know, and it's, you know what, and I'm like old school. I hate the fact that I don't have Facebook, I don't have Twitter, I don't have any of that, and I hate that I got text. But anyway, I was here yesterday, some of my friends, they go, what's going on with you? There's some blessings in my life that are causing me great stress. There's this going on. And my first response is, well, good, this is a sign. I'm moving back to LA in October. This is a sign we're supposed to be done. And that voice that said, just calm down. You can work it out later. So what I did, sitting in the back row yesterday going, I am sorry for my part in anything that has caused frustration or discomfort. You know, we can talk later. That would not, Stephen. No, I will hold on. I will see you and look right through you until you apologize. And it was just like, I already knew without the detail I had a part. So why don't I just own that right off the bat? And it just diffused it. You know, we talked this morning. We talked about the text thing and, you know, and my dictionary was different than his dictionary. I believe each of us have a dictionary. And I don't think those dictionaries always match. You know, like I can go up and we can do that. But in our dictionaries, he does not know the effects of the little boy sitting on the steps waiting for his dad. But my dictionary has a certain thing. And what that dictionary used to say, and it was shared with people, if you don't wait, you won't be disappointed. So what happened for people who are not my qualifiers or people who I do not have Al-Anon issues with, they would call and say, hey, Stephen, you want to go to a movie? I'm like, you know, I'm not sure. Call me that day. And if I'm not doing, you know, and I remember having a friend going, can't you make any type of commitment or plan? I'm like, yeah, I can plan on you calling me later and seeing if I want to go that day. And that could be a protection for me, but that can also have somebody over here going like, wow, you know, what's going on with that? And so, I needed to look at that. And so for me, in this relationship, in this dictionary thing, I think each one of us have, we were able to go, it's like, no, that's not what I meant at this point. And I'm like, oh, this is what I took at that point. And I was able to become reasonable, you know, and I was able to let him fill in the blank for himself rather than me. Because normally what I would do is I would have a thought over something you said, and then I wouldn't even need to talk to you about it because I would finish everything else that it meant. And that was the way I used to do. I used to just fill in the blanks. And so my amends in Al-Anon, I remember when I got to, and before he hung himself, I had got to see my part in it. And I was like, I don't owe this person an amends. I have gone out of my way to try to help, try to save, you know, try to, you know, mother, manipulate, martyrdom, you know, you talk about in Al-Anon. I came in holding on to the three C's, you know. I did not control it, I can't cause it, I can't cure it. But they talk about there's that fourth C, contribute. I had to look at where did I contribute to this. So I can remember in Al-Anon, this is the part that, you know, I always like, oh, I don't want to share that part. And I'm like, so this is why I'm going to share it. This person's disease manifested itself a lot with methamphetamine, as did mine. And I was like, I remember when I got to that stage of paranoia, that helped me reach my bottom quicker. I need to help him get paranoid. This is my thinking. So I'm going to go to the house, I'm going to knock on the door, and then I'm going to run. And then he's going to call and say, did you come by? And I'm going to be like, oh my God, are you kidding me? I think you're getting paranoid. That was the healthiest solution that I had to Al-Anon. I mean, it's one part I remember sharing with my sponsor in Al-Anon, and I remember her going like, oh my God. I'm like, yeah, exactly, exactly. And so for me, in my experience, it's not just the alcoholic or the addict that has sick and crazy behavior. I was insane. And that was my best thinking. This is how I'm going to do it. Okay. So thank you for the warning. I want to say, I want to thank Al-Anon, and I want to thank those, of course, the double winners, but I want to thank the members of Al-Anon who are not double winners. When I got here, I needed to gravitate towards you. I think it's just like in another country. I think it's right. They say when you go to learn another language, it's, what is it, full emergence? Is that what it is? Where you just go. And I needed that. I needed to be with someone who was not going to go back and forth, like speak to me in English and speak to me into another language. I needed them to speak to me only in that language and through gestures and through whatever. I needed to be not forced. I needed to have to learn the communication. And that is what the members of Al-Anon did for me, coming in with all that self-knowledge that I thought I had at 17. You helped me find the side of me that needed Al-Anon. You helped me amend, and I'm going to talk about another amend that I made to an ex-partner who did not have to go through all of that. He's different than me. That's why I was attracted to him. One of 15, young Mormon, you know, Mormon guy from Utah, just laid back. I'm the youngest of five. I was the one to hear, no, you can't have that, or Dad would come take the bike back. He's like, carefree, come one, come all. And I'm like, I need it to be like this so I can feel safe. And I remember I would get into his car, and I would see all these random tickets. So I start grabbing the tickets, and I'm going to put them in order by the date, and then I'm going to set them on the windshield, nice and neat, in order by date. And then he's going to get in the car, and I'm sitting there going, there is no way he does not notice those tickets I just organized and set in the dash. And he's just driving, he's not saying anything. So I start moving something on the dash, you know, just passive aggressive. Just so I am forced to, because my plan, this, where I set them, did not work, even if I scoot them right down in front of them. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, these parking tickets. He's like, yeah. I'm like, you got to pay these tickets. They're going to come boot the car or something. He goes, well, it doesn't matter if you don't have, if I don't have the money to pay it. And I'm like, okay. Let's get creative here. You know that the ticket is yours. Why don't you at least call and challenge the ticket? They're going to say, no, you lost, but at least it's going to buy you time to keep from the penalty and all. Whatever. He takes them and puts them in the glove box. And I'm getting ready to go on vacation, and I am crazed about these tickets in the glove box. I can't, you know, it's not out of sight, out of mind. I am crazy. I'm going crazy. So I'm like, you know, I have a dog that we share, you know, and he loves the dog, and I'm going out of town. So I have to find a way to make myself be okay with paying those tickets. So I'm like, well, I'm going to pay these tickets because I don't want the car to get, you know, impounded, and if something happened to the dog, you can't go, you know, ridiculous. So I pay the tickets and come up with a payment plan, and he pays it back, and, you know, we break up. We're very close now. I mean, I love him to death. We're super, super close. And this shocking thing happened when we broke up. I'm like, oh my gosh, he can reach his potential with or without me. In fact, he can thrive. He's thriving. His life is good. His truck is paid off. He never lost it. All of this without me. Who knew? And it was a wonderful thing for me to recognize. And I will end with, I am an Al-Anon because I am affected by other people's drinking or using, whether they're close to me or not. I'm also an Al-Anon because I know the difference of falling apart and falling together. I'm glad you were here to catch me. Thank you. And Rob, thank you so much for asking me to share at the conference. Thank you.